Hi, my name is Kira, and my question for the podcast is this. If in a story an angel is sent down to inform Adam and literally give him knowledge of the evil of Satan, why is the tree of knowledge of evil even there in the first place?
Does this tree of the knowledge of good and evil even exist? What does it do? Does it give you knowledge if you eat it? And why would God place a tree in this garden which has the capacity to give Adam and Eve knowledge he would rather they not have? But then again, why would God not want Adam and Eve to have the knowledge of good? I maybe can understand why he doesn't want them to have the knowledge of evil, but surely he wants them to have the knowledge of good. I mean, didn't Adam spend 4 books talking to Raphael and getting this long explanation of God's goodness? Why is there like a ceiling to that knowledge? Why is there a restriction? But then again, maybe this tree doesn't actually impart any knowledge at all. Maybe it's just a test. Just an obedience test for Adam and Eve. But if it's just an obedience test, then surely God does not want them to eat it. But if they never eat the forbidden fruit, won't they always remain in a certain degree of ignorance? Won't they always have in the back of their minds the implicit suggestion that knowledge, both of good and evil, is lacking within them? What don't they know? And so in so many ways, the mere existence of this tree represents a fundamental paradox, a kind of mystery. This tree imparts the knowledge of good and evil, and it is restricted. That's the clearest representation of the concept of mystery that I can think of. The idea that knowledge certainly does exist beyond this boundary, and you can't cross this boundary. Adam has accepted this situation and is more than happy to live like this forever. But Eve has begun to question it. She doesn't know herself well enough to know whether she can recognize and resist temptation, and she's got to know that this tree provides the answer to that question in one way or another. And that's the weirdest thing about Eve's situation, is that she starts to question their happiness in paradise before she's even really tempted. The tree itself is a kind of temptation, and it's a temptation to which Eve has already begun to succumb. And I think a lot of us have too. Just by sitting and thinking about the existence of this tree and what it could represent. Today, Satan is going to tempt Eve. And his temptation is unbelievably persuasive. Between his temptation and what Eve already has perceived about this paradise, and the simple fact of the tree itself and the mystery that it represents, when you put all these three things together, it's very common for readers at the end of this to just sit back and say, you know what? She should eat the fruit. She should rebel against God. By the end of today's episode, Eve is going to be fully convinced. She's going to take a bite of this forbidden fruit. And if Milton has done his job, you will too. Welcome to Darkness Visible. I'm Mr. Orem. Today's episode, Forbidden Fruit. We're going to begin today on line 494 with Satan's approach in the form of a serpent to Eve. And you're going to notice there's something kind of funny about the way this serpent moves. He doesn't slither around on the ground like serpents do today. He actually kind of walks on this base of undulating folds of snake. I'll let Milton try to explain it to you. And you can try to paint a picture in your mind of a snake walking around instead of slithering. So spake the enemy of mankind, enclosed in serpent, inmate bad, and toward Eve addressed his way, not with indented wave prone on the ground as since, but on his rear, circular base of rising folds that towered fold above fold, a surging maze. His head crested aloft, and carbuncle his eyes, with burnished neck of verdant gold, erect amidst his circling spires that on the grass floated redundant. Pleasing was his shape, and lovely. Never a sense of serpent kind lovelier. We're going to skip ahead to line 523. He, bolder now, uncalled before her stood, but as in gaze admiring. Oft he bowed his turret crest and sleek enameled neck, fawning, and licked the ground whereon she trod. His gentle dumb expression turned at length the eye of Eve to mark his play. He, glad of her attention gained, with serpent tongue organic or impulse of vocal air, his fraudulent temptation thus began.
Wonder not, sovereign mistress, if perhaps thou canst, who art sole wonder, much less arm thy looks, the heaven of mildness, with disdain, displeased that I approach thee thus, and gaze, insatiate, I thus single, nor have feared thy awful brow, more awful thus retire. Fairest resemblance of thy maker fair, thee all things living gaze on, all things thine by gift, and thy celestial beauty adore, with ravishment beheld, there best beheld where universally admired. But here, in this enclosure wild, these beasts among, beholders rude and shallow, to discern half what in thee is fair, one man except. Who sees thee? And what is one? Who shouldst be seen? A goddess among gods, adored and served by angels numberless, thy daily train.
So glozed the tempter, and his proem tuned. Into the heart of Eve his words made way, though at the voice much marveling. At length, not unamazed, she thus in answer spake.
What may this mean? Language of man pronounced by tongue of brute, and human sense expressed? The first, at least, of these I thought denied to beasts, whom God on their creation day created mute to all articulate sound. The latter I demur, for in their looks much reason, and in their actions oft appears. The serpent, subtlest beast of all the field, I knew, but not with human voice endued. Redouble then this miracle, and say, how camest thou speakable of mute? And how to me so friendly grown above the rest of brutal kind that daily are in sight. Say, for such wonder claims attention due.
Well, so this is a great start for Satan, obviously. He walks up, he sort of undulates up to Eve and just sort of gazes at her for a while. And she's very used to this, you know, as she's working here in the garden, animals come around and check her out all the time. And that's not really all that strange. What is strange, of course, is that this animal can talk. It's a talking snake. And not only can it talk, but it speaks very eloquently and very kindly to Eve. You might have noticed what Satan said to her. Hey, you're absolutely gorgeous. I'm just going to say it. You are beautiful on a celestial level. And I'm here to admire your beauty like everyone else should be. I can't believe there's only one other being here who can really appreciate your beauty when your beauty is so immense that really the entire universe should be witnessing it.
You should be served and worshipped like the goddess that you are. And so that's what I'm doing here. I'm worshipping you as a goddess and beholding your ravishing beauty. Well, you might notice that this dials in on exactly Eve's weakness as a character. The way she has been written, she from day one was, let's be honest, a little bit vain. Falling in love with your own reflection could be interpreted as a little bit of narcissism. So yeah, I think she could be described as somewhat vain. Now, of course, her vanity comes from a real, actual beauty, like an immense, powerful beauty that even to Adam has been just like mysteriously overpowering. So granted, okay, like it's fair that she knows she's beautiful, but that's the very thing that Satan begins with. But she just goes to show how effective he is as a tempter. Starting out with some words that get right into Eve's heart. Now you might be wondering, well, didn't Eve come out here to face temptation? Which is, and the second she comes out here, there's a talking snake that immediately starts appealing to her vanity and pride. Hello? Why aren't warning bells going off in her head? Hey, Eve, this is temptation. This is what you were trying to avoid. Don't be stupid. Well, how's she supposed to know? She lacks the knowledge of good and evil. You'll sit back and say, well, Adam warned her. He told her. He explained to her. What was it that he explained again? Oh, yeah, that when she's being tempted, she won't know that it's temptation. Huh, that's inconvenient. And it certainly seems to be happening already. Well, so a talking snake comes up to you and says, hey, I'm sorry, I just have to say this. You are unbearably beautiful, and I kiss the ground under your feet and worship you, and really you should be worshipped by everybody. You'd have two questions for this snake. And Eve asks these exact two questions. How did you learn how to talk? You're a snake. That's weird. Also, why are you so obsessed with me? Well, Satan's in now. Here he goes. He's going to explain. He's going to tell Eve a little story about how he changed from a normal dumb snake into a talking snake. And then he'll explain why, out of all creations, he has come to the feet of Eve to worship. To whom the guileful tempter thus replied, Empress of this fair world, resplendent Eve, easy to me it is to tell thee all what thou commandst, and right thou shouldst be obeyed. I was at first as other beasts that graze the trodden herb, of abject thoughts and low, as was my food, nor aught but food discerned or sex, and apprehended nothing high, till on a day, roving the field, I chanced a goodly tree far distant to behold, loaden with fruit of fairest colors mixed, ruddy and gold. I nearer drew to gaze, when from the boughs a savory odor blown, grateful to appetite, more pleased my sense than smell of sweetest fennel, or the teats of ewe or goat dropping with milk at even, unsucked of lamb or kid that tend their play. To satisfy the sharp desire I had of tasting those fair apples, I resolved not to defer. Hunger and thirst at once, powerful persuaders, quickened at the scent of that alluring fruit, urged me so keen. About the mossy trunk I wound me soon, for high from ground the branches would require thy utmost reach, or Adam's. Round the tree, all other beasts that saw with like desire, longing and envying stood, but could not reach. Amid the tree now got, where plenty hung temptation so nigh, to pluck and eat my fill, I spared not. For such pleasure till that hour at feed or fountain, never had I found. sated at length, ere long I might perceive strange alteration in me, to degree of reason in my inward powers, and speech wanted not long, though to this shape retained. Thenceforth, to speculations high or deep I turned my thoughts, and with capacious mind considered all things visible in heaven, or earth, or middle, all things fair and good. But all that fair and good in thy divine semblance, and in thy beauty's heavenly ray, united I beheld. No fair to thine equivalent or second, which compelled me thus, though importune perhaps, to come and gaze and worship thee, of right declared, sovereign of creatures, universal dame.
Yeah, so I used to be a dumb snake. Just like every other dumb snake, I didn't think about really anything other than food and sex. That's right, folks. Eating and reproducing are the only two things on the mind of the animal. And that was me. And so, thinking a lot about food as I did, I noticed that there was this fruit that looked really, really good. And so I made my way to that tree, and sure enough, all the other animals around, they really wanted to taste this fruit, but they couldn't reach it. I, of course, being a snake, was able to slither up into that tree, and wow, that fruit smelled good. It smelled even better than it looked, and so, well, I took a bite. The weirdest thing happened. I suddenly had the capacity to speak. I went from being a dumb, mute animal to a speaking, reasoning being. It was the craziest thing. I began thinking and perceiving the entire creation. Simply by using my mind, I could see everything. And I recognized at that moment where I should be. Out of all created things, I came directly to you. Because there is nothing in creation more worthy of praise than you. So that's how I learned how to speak. And, well, that's why I'm kind of hitting on you. So talked the spirited sly snake. And Eve, yet more amazed, unwary, thus replied, "Serpent, thy overpraising leaves in doubt the virtue of that fruit in thee first proved. But say, where grows the tree? From hence how far? For many are the trees of God that grow in paradise, and various yet unknown to us. In such abundance lies our choice, as leaves a greater store of fruit untouched, still hanging incorruptible, till men grow up to their provision, and more hands help to disburden nature of her birth. To whom the wily adder, blithe and glad, "Empress, the way is ready, and not long. Beyond a row of myrtles, on a flat fast by a fountain, one small thicket passed of blowing myrrh and balm. If thou accept my conduct, I can bring thee thither soon." "Lead, then," said Eve.
Ah, how could she be tricked so easily? It's almost like she's completely ignorant of good and evil. Well, the snake says all this stuff, and Eve is just like, "Oh, geez, come on. I don't know if I can really trust a fruit if it's telling you that I'm the most beautiful being in creation. But where is that fruit? How far away is it? Because, you know, there's all kinds of fruit trees in this garden, and we haven't had a chance to taste all of them. This one sounds amazing. Can you show me where it is?" And Satan's like, "Absolutely. Why don't you follow me? I'll show you immediately." Because you, of course, should be immediately obeyed. So continuing his temptation there with that, like, you know, "Oh yeah, absolutely, sovereign mistress, no doubt, empress, you should be obeyed and I will obey you forthwith." But also, you know, he has already done that salesman thing where he makes the other person feel comfortable and at ease, and then he opens up this unfulfilled need, this desire, and provides the solution to that desire. Well, Eve is hook, line, and sinker, just ready to follow him off to this tree. And so off they go. And we're thinking, oh my gosh, this is way too easy. This is way too easy for Satan to tempt Eve. This is dumb. Come on, Eve, wake up. Don't you know it's going to be the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? This is just pathetic. If Eve eats this fruit and she doesn't even know what fruit it is, that's not even going to count, right? That won't count as disobedience because she was so deceived, so tricked, that she didn't even know what she was doing. Well, hang on a second. Satan brings her to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and I'm happy to say Eve immediately recognizes it. And she declares quite clearly to Satan that this tree is off limits. So don't worry, folks, it is not going to be that easy for Satan. Phase one was easy, because Satan really doesn't have to create a desire in Eve to eat this fruit. She already wants to. We know that. What Satan has to create in Eve is the desire to willingly rebel against God. The desire to disobey. The belief that God is wrong and that she should reject his command and disobey him. That is what Satan has in front of him as a task. And I gotta say, that's a lot harder than just getting Eve to want knowledge. Of course she wants knowledge. But what she does not want is to lose paradise and disobey God. So that is Satan's task in phase two.
Lead then, said Eve.
He, leading, swiftly rolled in tangles and made intricate seem straight to mischief swift. Hope elevates and joy brightens his crest. So glistered the dire snake, and into fraud led Eve, our credulous mother, to the tree of prohibition, root of all our woe, which when she saw, thus to her guide she spake.
Serpent, we might have spared our coming hither. Fruitless to me, though fruit be here to excess, the credit of whose virtue rests with thee. Wondrous indeed, if cause of such effects. But of this tree we may not taste nor touch. God so commanded, and left that command sole daughter of his voice. The rest we live law to ourselves. Our reason is our law.
To whom the tempter guilefully replied,
indeed? Have God then said that of the fruit of all these garden trees ye shall not eat, yet lords declare? Of all in earth or air?
To whom Eve, yet sinless,
of the fruit of each tree in the garden we may eat, but of the fruit of this fair tree amidst the garden, God hath said, ye shall not eat thereof, nor shall ye touch it, lest ye die.
So again, there's no ambiguity here for Eve. She knows exactly what's going on. She's in front of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. There is a creature who has brought her here with the intent to share this fruit with her, and she knows it's forbidden. So surely at this point, Eve is going to wake up and realize she's being tempted, right? There's even this hint that she's already a little bit doubtful about the serpent's insinuation that this fruit really has caused him to be able to talk and reason. Because she says, if, in line 650, this is a wondrous tree if it really is the cause of your ability to speak and reason. That if, I mean, that's enough for us to sort of sit back and say, wait, now Eve is really kind of aware here that there is a possibility, there is the potential that the story this serpent is telling her is not true. And if she's aware of that, then surely she must be within striking distance of realizing that she's being tempted. But lacking the knowledge of good and evil, and perhaps again with that instinctive desire to know, she remains very vulnerable to this temptation. And it's in that state of profound vulnerability that Satan makes his next move. He is going to level up now. And you're going to notice that things get a lot more serious very quickly. Notice the way he puts on a new part. He sort of
takes on the role of just like a wounded follower of a great goddess whose worthiness is not being appropriately acknowledged. And sort of on Eve's behalf, explaining like, oh, this is terrible that God is restricting from you, the greatest of all creations, access to the one thing you lack. I feel so bad for you. And it's because I love you and because I want the best for you, because I realize and recognize that you are the greatest of all creations, that I am about to tell you why you really need to eat this fruit. And you might recall that hate disguised as love was the tactic Satan said he was going to use against Eve. Well, this is him beginning to use it. Starting on 664, she scarce had said, though brief, when now more bold, the tempter, but with show of zeal and love to man, and indignation at his wrong, new part puts on, and as to passion moved, fluctuates disturbed yet comely, and in act raised as of some great matter to begin. As when of old some orator renowned in Athens or free Rome, whence eloquence flourished, since mute, to some great cause addressed, stood in himself collected, while each part, motion, each act, one audience ere the tongue sometimes in height began, as no delay of preface brooking through his zeal of right, so standing, moving, or to height upgrown, the tempter all impassioned thus began. Oh, sacred, wise, and wisdom-giving plant, mother of science! Now I feel thy power within me clear, not only to discern things in their causes, but to trace the ways of highest agents, deemed however wise. Queen of this universe, do not believe those rigid threats of death. Ye shall not die. How should ye? By the fruit? It gives you life to knowledge. By the threatener? Look on me. Me who have touched and tasted, yet both live and life more perfect have attained than fate meant me, by venturing higher than my lot. Shall that be shut to man, which to the beast is open? Or will God incense his ire for such a petty trespass, and not praise, rather, your dauntless virtue, whom the pain of death denounced? Whatever thing death be, deterred not from achieving what might lead to happier life, knowledge of good and evil. Of good? How just. Of evil, if what is evil be real, why not known, since easier shunned? God, therefore, cannot hurt ye and be just. Not just, not God. Not feared then, nor obeyed. Your fear itself of death removes the fear.
I got to interrupt Satan here, but he's already kind of on a roll. And you might notice that line 702, is a little bit of a circle. He says, your fear itself of death removes the fear. What does he mean by that? Well, we have to go back through the first part of this speech to really understand it. He addresses the tree and he says, wow, oh, finally I understand. I finally feel your power, oh wonderful tree, oh mother of science, oh wisdom-giving plant. I finally really understand what you gave me. You didn't just give me reasoning and the ability to speak. I understand now you gave me the ability to trace the ways of highest agents deemed however wise. In other words, you gave me the capacity to see and know the mind of God. And then he turns to Eve and says, hey, you are not going to die if you eat this fruit. The fruit gives knowledge. Knowledge of good and evil.
If the fruit gives knowledge of good, well, then to seek it out and partake of it is a good thing. That's fairly evident. If the fruit gives knowledge of evil, it also should be sought out and partaken, because knowledge of evil makes evil easier to shun. And it's never been more obvious that that is true, because if Eve had the knowledge of evil, surely she'd be able to resist this exact temptation. But she can't, because she doesn't have the knowledge of evil yet. And so seeking out and partaking of the fruit of this tree is an inherently just and right thing to do. And we know that because the tree is called the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And both of those kinds of knowledge are beneficial and right, like you should have those things. And I, talking snake, I ate the fruit of this tree and I'm fine, I didn't die. Not only did I not die, I was elevated above my original creation. By venturing higher than my lot, I have attained to a more perfect life. Do you really think that God is going to get so mad at you for eating a fruit? No, no. He's going to praise your dauntless virtue for seeking out and partaking of this good thing. Maybe that's the test implicit in the existence of this tree. Maybe what God is really testing is whether Adam and Eve are willing to step outside these artificial boundaries and seek to venture higher than their lot. Maybe that's what God secretly wants them to do. How many of us have thought this already, that God actually does want Eve to eat the fruit? And that's kind of what Satan is implying here. He's not going to kill you. God wouldn't kill you for seeking out something that is plainly good and right. And here's the thing. If he does actually threaten to kill you for seeking out something that should justly be yours, then I got some bad news for you about God. If he really does restrict knowledge from you on pain of death, then he's not just. God is unjust, and if he's unjust, he's not really God. And if he's not really God, why obey him? God cannot therefore hurt ye and be just. Not just, not God. Not feared then, nor obeyed. Your fear itself of death removes the fear. The fact that you're afraid to die as a consequence of eating this fruit just proves that God is unjust and therefore is not actually God and therefore can't kill you. So it proves that you won't die. Line 703, Satan continues. He begins to speculate. Why then, if God's not going to kill you for taking this fruit, why would he forbid it at all? Why do you think, Eve, this fruit, the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, both of which, of course, are just and right pieces of knowledge to obtain, why would it be restricted? And Satan has some ideas. Why then was this forbid? Why but to awe? Why but to keep ye low and ignorant, his worshippers? He knows that in the day ye eat thereof, your eyes, that seem so clear, yet are but dim, shall perfectly be then open and cleared, and ye shall be as gods, knowing both good and evil as they know. That ye should be as gods, since I as man, internal man, is but proportion meat, I of brute, human, ye of human, gods. So shall ye die, perhaps, by putting off human to put on gods? Death to be wished, though threatened, which no worse than this can bring. And what are gods, that man may not become as they,
participating godlike food. The gods are first, and that advantage use on our belief that all from them proceeds, I question it. For this fair earth I see, warmed by the sun, producing every kind, them nothing. If they all things, who enclosed knowledge of good and evil in this tree? That whoso eats thereof forthwith attains wisdom without their leave. And wherein lies the offense that man should thus attain to know? What can your knowledge hurt him, or this tree impart against his will, if all be his? Or is it envy? And can envy dwell in heavenly breasts? These and many more causes import your need of this fair fruit. Goddess humane, reach then and freely taste.
He ended, and his words, replete with guile, into her heart, too easy entrance, won.
So in this second half of Satan's real temptation, he extends and expands on his argument. He's explained already, being afraid that you're going to die for eating this fruit, oh, that just proves that God's unjust and that therefore there's nothing to be afraid of. But let's think about God a little bit. Why would he have restricted this from you in the first place? Well, why else? He wants to keep you low and ignorant. Because he knows that if you eat this fruit and gain the knowledge of good and evil, you will be on his level. You will be a goddess. Why not? Why not? If that's all you lack, and if you only lack one thing, well, surely to partake of that one thing would then complete you. Just as it completed me. I was a dumb, unthinking serpent, and now look at me. I can reason and speak. I went from being a snake to being quite a bit more like man. I bet that you, if you ate this fruit, would suddenly become very much like the gods. It makes logical sense, Eve. And maybe that's what God means when he says you'll die in the day that you eat it. Maybe he means you will cease to be human because you have in fact become a goddess. And hey, if that's what death is, bring it on! Is there anything really all that special about gods anyway? Why can't man become just like them? If he eats what they eat, man participating godlike food should in fact become godlike. It makes perfect sense, doesn't it, Eve? And think about this. What if the gods are just the first beings who happened upon this particular fruit tree? What if, after eating the fruit of this tree, they suddenly realized that it had elevated them above all other creation? What would they do if they wanted to maintain a stranglehold on power? Well, of course, they'd look around and say, hey, we created all of you, and this tree is off limits. Thereby keeping everyone in subjection to them. The gods are first, he says, meaning they just happen to be the first ones to obtain this knowledge. And they use that advantage on our belief that all from them proceeds. They make us think that they created everything. Well, I don't know about that, Eve, because I look around at this planet and I see natural forces at work. I see that light and warmth from the sun gives life to the plants and animals on this earth. I don't actually see God's hand in any of this. But if they did create all this stuff, then why does this tree even exist? Why is this tree in the garden at all if the gods don't want anyone to have access to it?
If a tree exists which has the capacity to impart knowledge that renders you equal to gods, then the gods probably, if they had created all things, wouldn't have planted it here in the first place. So this tree and the existence of this tree in the garden also serves as proof that the gods aren't creators. Not only is God unjust and therefore not God, God is also not the creator and therefore not God. You know this, Eve, because you are afraid to eat this fruit, and even more, because this fruit exists at all. There's so many reasons why you need to taste this fruit. But of course, the big one, the one that is just implied by the conditions of paradise, is that you don't know what you don't know until you take a bite. Oh, I gotta say, this is unbearably persuasive and compelling, especially when you consider the situation that Eve is in the story. Intended to be subjected and yet impulsively driven to seek the edges and boundaries of her subjection. Designed to be submissive, yet naturally so boundless in her curiosity. Made from Adam's rib, she has been taught to believe that she is not in fact her own, but that she is of him. And yet again, instinctively, self-identification, self-love are the very first impulses that she has. And now there is this brilliant, profound, and moving argument that has been placed in front of her. And of course, she's not nearly sophisticated enough to begin to respond with any degree of critical thought or analysis. And even if she were, she would probably come to the very same conclusion that many of us are coming to right now, which is, these arguments are undeniable. If we accept the premise that knowledge is inherently virtuous and should be sought, and if we accept the premise that this tree can impart that knowledge, then Satan is right. His argument is valid, and it's not even a temptation. It's just, like, the truth. It is right and good to seek knowledge, even if that knowledge is restricted. And the fact that it's restricted casts grave doubts on the goodness of God. Jumping back into the text, line 735. Fixed on the fruit she gazed, which to behold might tempt alone, and in her ears the sound yet rung of his persuasive words, imprend with reason to her seeming, and with truth. Meanwhile, the hour of noon drew on, and waked an eager appetite, raised by the smell so savory of that fruit, which with desire inclinable now grown to touch or taste, solicited her longing eye. Yet first, pausing a while, thus to herself she mused, great are thy virtues, doubtless best of fruits, though kept from man, and worthy to be admired, whose taste, too long forborne, at first assay gave elocution to the mute, and taught the tongue not made for speech to speak thy praise. Thy praise he also who forbids thy use conceals not from us, naming thee the tree of knowledge. Knowledge both of good and evil forbids us then to taste, but his forbidding commends thee more, while it infers the good by thee communicated, and our want. For good unknown sure is not had, or had and yet unknown is as not had at all. In plain then, what forbids he but to know? Forbids us good, forbids us to be wise. Such prohibitions bind not.
But if death bind us with afterbands, what profits then our inward freedom? In the day we eat of this fair fruit, our doom is we shall die. How dies the serpent? He hath eaten and lives and knows and speaks and reasons and discerns, irrational till then. For us alone was death invented? Or to us denied this intellectual food for beasts reserved? For beasts it seems. Yet that one beast which first hath tasted envies not, but brings with joy the good befallen him, author unsuspect, friendly to man, far from deceit or guile. What fear I then? Rather, what know to fear? Under this ignorance of good and evil, of God or death, of law or penalty. Here grows the cure of all, this fruit divine, fair to the eye, inviting to the taste, of virtue to make wise. What hinders then to reach and feed at once both body and mind? So saying, her rash hand, in evil hour, forth reaching to the fruit, she plucked. She eat. Earth felt the wound, and nature from her seat, sighing through all her works, gave signs of woe that all was lost. Back to the thicket slunk the guilty serpent, and well might, for Eve, intent now wholly on her taste, not else regarded, such delight till then as seemed in fruit she never tasted, whether true or fancied so, through expectation high of knowledge, nor was Godhead from her thought. Greedily she engorged without restraint, and knew not, eating death. She did it. Oh, she did it. But why? Look at line 756 and 757. It's again just the height of Eve's brilliance in her perception of this situation. She says, good unknown sure is not had, or had and yet unknown is as not had at all. If you don't know with certainty what good is, then do you really have it? And even if you do have good, but you don't know it, then it's just as if you don't have it at all. The existence of the tree implies that no matter how happy they are in paradise, and no matter how good they are, they can never know the authenticity of that happiness or that good. And so what is it that God is really forbidding from us? He's forbidding knowledge. He's forbidding wisdom. He is forbidding good. That is a law that ought not to be followed. And if God has placed me under this unjust restriction, then I think Satan might be right. What am I afraid of? And here's the kicker on 773. Rather, what do I know to fear under this ignorance of good and evil? In my state of ignorance, I don't actually know what to be afraid of. I don't even know what death is. And the only possible way that I can know anything with certainty is to eat the fruit of this tree. It looks good, it smells good, and it promises to give me knowledge of good. The only thing holding me back is this unjust restriction. Time to find out. And Eve willingly disobeys.
God.
Next time, we're going to find out whether or not this tree really does impart the knowledge of good and evil. Whether this really does make Eve a goddess. Or if it is in fact not ambrosia, but poison. Tempted by the desire to become like God, to raise herself above the subjection in which she has been placed, Eve has eaten the fruit.
Bite my tongue, bide my time, wearing a warning sign. Wait till the world is mine.
What next? Next, of course, we gotta get Adam to eat this fruit as well. Only then will the fall of man be complete.
You should see me in a crowd. I'm gonna run, there's nothing to hide. Watch me make them bow. One by one by one. One by one by. You should see me in a crowd. Your silence is my favorite sound. Watch me make them bow. One by one by one. One by.
Darkness Visible is a labor of love for my 10th grade English students, and everyone is more than welcome to listen for free. But if you're a parent and you're looking for ways to support teachers, here's one way. Click on the donate link in the description to this episode and make a small recurring contribution to keep this show alive.
Sleeping inside of her. You're pretty. I'm okay. I'm not your baby. If you think I'm pretty, you should see me in the crowd. I'm gonna run, there's nothing to hide. Watch me make them bow. One by one by one. Crowd. Your silence is my favorite sound. Watch me make them bow. One by one by one. One by one by one. Crowd. I'm gonna run, there's nothing.